Hello and welcome to the brand new series of That Gabby Roslin podcast, Reasons to be Joyful. If you're new to the podcast, a very warm welcome and thank you for listening. And if you've been listening since day one, well, it's great to have you back with us. We have some amazing guests lined up for you this season, including Rosie Jones, David Harewood, Minnie Driver, Lenny Rush, Diane Morgan, Harriet Walter, Alfie Bowe, Jake Shears, Victoria Smurfit, Tom Chaplin. In fact, it's a party I really want to go to. I'd like to be there with all of them. I really hope you enjoy the series. Welcome to Reasons to be Joyful. And somebody who brings me joy every single time I see her is the wonderful Charlene Spiteri. Yes, she's an international rock goddess and she's brilliant and she's funny, she's naughty, she says it as it is. And in this episode, you'll be hearing some stories that you will have never heard anywhere before. She's very honest. She's very open about being bullied as a child, about certain things that happened as an adult. Yes, that Paris, Texas incident. And listen out for a lovely story about Dame Judi Dench too. Charlene Spiteri.
Yeah.
When we sat down, you said there's a story about at your grandma's house.
Oh, yeah. So we were talking about people being famous, like, you know, we're talking about Michael Ball and you said, you were at college.
I was.
Yeah, and you said he did Sweeney Todd, and you all went to him. Everybody just went, "Oh my god, he's going to be famous." This is really funny how you can see that, but I think that's probably why I'm still fighting with myself, because when we were growing up, my gran used to have parties at the house every second week, and everybody used to have to go up and do a turn and everything. And my cousin Carlin, couple of years older than me, she used to get up and sing this song. So everybody would do the thing. She always used to sing this song that was an old traditional song called "I Once Had a Dear Old Mother," and it's about this mother that dies and she watches over her daughter for heaven and everything, all the aunties and everything, and everybody would be going, "Oh my god," like crying, "Oh, it's beautiful." My cousin would be like absolutely milking it, and I'd be standing in the doorway going, "Oh come on, this is absolute rubbish. This is the worst song I've ever heard in my life. Oh my god," like literally, and just itching to go on. And then I'd literally go on and I'd go into like 10 guitars or Banks of the Ohio, or you know, I'd literally sing one of these songs and I'd be like, "I had a band," and literally clear the room.
No,
yeah, literally the aunties would go, "Get another wee drink, another wee cup of tea," and they just literally clear the room. And I think literally that's what happened to me.
So all these,
I think I've been scarred for life.
But all these years later, surely they don't clear the room anymore.
Most of them are dead, but not through any wish of mine. Really? Like, I've never held a grudge in my life.
How old were you when this happened?
I would have been about 7 or 8.
Okay, you haven't forgotten it. You haven't let it go.
We played the Hydro in Glasgow. This was years ago, like probably about, I don't know, 10 years ago, whatever. And we were playing the Hydro, and we went on for the second encore. And it was like the place, the atmosphere was electric. And I don't know what came over me. And I went on, I went to all the aunties who went and got a drink and left me standing there singing the song. "You wanted the guest list. I hope you're all enjoying yourselves now watching this." I mean, talk about bitter
and
twisted.
But isn't it funny though, some of those things never leave us.
They never leave you. Plus, they're part of things that, I guess, drive you. You know, there is a drive that, I always say to my daughter, I says, look, there's going to be things that are going to happen in your life. There's going to be really big disappointments, and there's going to be people that will speak to you in a way that you're thinking, "Oh my God, that is probably one of the most hurtful, horrible things I've ever heard." I says, "But you know what?" I went, "You're either one of the people that like sinks with it, or you're going to swim with it. You're just either going to go, do you know what? Fine, that's what you think. That's not what I think." And soldier on.
You're a swimmer. Is Misty Kidd a swimmer?
Yeah, I think she is. I mean, she holds it, which is funny because I always held it as well as a kid, you know, even as an adult, as I think. I'll be like, "Oh my God," I'll be like, "God, that was like a stab to the heart." So you can hurt me, but you'll not see it, but I will be hurt. I'll really be hurt. And I'll be like, right, okay, let's do it. Yeah, when we were signing our record company, we had one of the heads of the Mercury Records at that point, back in, it was like, what, 86 or something, 87 when we signed. And I remember he called me a dodgy boiler, and I never forgot
He called you a dodgy boiler?
He called me a dodgy boiler, and I never, ever forgot
Well, I'm not
it.
Surprised. That's horrible.
I literally was like, he thought I didn't hear him, but I heard him loud and clear.
Did you say anything to him?
I said to him years later, I waited for my moment when we'd sold a lot of records. I went, still a dodgy boiler, eh? And he had no idea what I was talking about, and I told him. And I could see that, oh God. Yeah, and I thought, I'm just going to totally shame you.
So you do hold on to things. It's funny.
Oh, I really do hold on to stuff.
This, what's so interesting about you, and I've known you for a very long time, is that this podcast is Reasons to be Joyful. And you do spread joy. And you have, when you're on stage, I've seen you live. I've seen you at people's houses. I've seen you in restaurants, whatever it is. And you do have this wonderful way of uplifting people, and your songs, and people get completely immersed in your songs.
Thank you.
But it's interesting that maybe you don't feel that joy.
But I do feel joy, and I love to feel joy. That's the whole thing is I think, how, you know, what do you want to be? Do you want to be really sad and down, or do you want to be, and you know, and I know people go, well, that's easy to say in your position. Yeah, it is easy. It's a lot easier to say in my position. But
you've been through stuff.
Yeah, but everything, yeah. You know, everything, life never started here with me. Yeah. I wasn't born as an international pop star, yeah. Do you know what I mean? But I think that it's really important to kind of, okay, well, what can I get out of it? What's the happy thing that I can get out of it? How can I look at it to not feel the pain? Because I know I don't like feeling the pain.
Yes.
So that's what I don't like. I don't like that feeling. I don't like that feeling of down or sad or, you know, anxiety or, you know, I just don't like it. I was so badly bullied as a kid. And it was just a horrible...
By other kids.
Yeah,
as well.
In school. And it was just a horrible time in my life. You know, like people going about school, and I am like the worst person to talk about school, because I'm like, those were the worst years of my life. I absolutely hated
And you
school.
Don't... That's another thing that you don't get over. You're talking about the aunties doing those... I think it's hurtful and horrible. But it's what kids can do to other kids. And it does stay with everybody I've spoken to. And interestingly, the amount of people that I speak to who are in the industry who were bullied or were supremely shy and they come out on top. That's not saying that the bullies don't hurt. Bullies should stop. It's horrible.
Yeah,
but it makes you what you are.
It does. It does to a certain degree, because I know that if I see someone, or if I'm in a situation, in a work situation, or in a meeting or whatever, and I see someone getting bullied, I like go back to being that 12, 14-year-old. I literally bristle, and I cannot help getting involved.
Good.
Like, I'm a bit like,
you're saving them from that hurt.
Well, it's not that. I just think there's always that thing where you know what it's like for someone to stand up for you or be on your side.
Did people stand up for you?
No. Eventually, eventually it kind of exploded into something that became, which was horrible, became like a physical fight. I mean, it was physical before that, when they would like push me and grab my hair and spit on me and everything and all that kind of thing. But it turned that just one day I just snapped, and I actually snapped out of fear. I was so scared that I was like, oh my god, and I don't even remember, like, I mean, there's bits of it that you remember, but I remember like two teachers pulling me off this girl, and there was a whole gang of girls and you know, and then it became, then you become that, like, because my sister's 3 years younger than me, but when my sister went to secondary school, she went, oh yeah, Psycho Spiteri, that's your sister. So then suddenly I get a name of being a psycho, because, you know, I lost all control, and I actually ended up getting suspended with the girl from school.
The one that you had the fight with?
Yeah, and the teachers were like, oh my God, you know, Charlene's so quiet. I mean, believe it or not, I was very quiet at school. Yeah, it was that whole thing, and my mum went to the school, and then it was all fine, and I was just left alone. And then I just could not wait to get out of school. You know, I literally was gone from school at 15.
Did you tell anybody that was happening to you? Did you tell your mum? Did you tell the teachers?
No, I just didn't. I didn't tell anybody. You don't, you just, you know, I think anybody that, there'll be people that will hear this and maybe go, oh my God, I know exactly what you're talking about. You just don't, because there's that little bit of you think that it'll stop, it'll go away, it'll eventually, you know, they'll eventually get bored or something. And eventually did stop, but it went on for about a year, like just over a year.
It's so cruel. And everybody always says, you know, it's not about, that wasn't about you, that was about them. But yeah, at the time, when you're a child, and that's, you don't get that.
And that is, you know, that's what I was speaking to a friend yesterday, like, I mean, a grown-up, one of my friends, and, you know, we were sitting having lunch and she was telling me somebody had said something unbelievably, like, had got a bit drunk and then just literally just started in this terrible rhetoric of just nastiness of, this is, your life's going to be like this forever because you're this kind of person. And
what?
Like, so, and she said she was absolutely blown away. She was like, oh my God, oh my God. And she realised that she didn't, you know, she had to like clear out certain people in her life because they just weren't proper friends.
You've just
got to get rid of toxic and horribleness in your life. You know, we all want to have a nice life. Yeah, I'm happy digging holes in my garden. I'm like, that's my favourite thing. I'm just like, yeah, great.
I'm performing and writing.
I do, yeah, I love all of that, yeah. You know, but for me that's like, that's...
Is that work?
That's not work, that comes with life. I can't write or do what I do if I didn't actually have life. I couldn't literally be on the road, you know, every single day of my life or doing... I need to go and do the shopping or I need to go and, you know...
Go to the gym. One of the stories I remember.
Me going to a gym?
You were coming out of a gym, so this is years ago.
Oh, no, I must have been coming out of a gym because I was probably buying something.
Maybe you were swimming. Had you been swimming?
Oh, I'd been swimming. I had been swimming. I like swimming.
And you had a hoodie on and you came out and you were coming down the escalators and I was going up the... This is years ago. I was going up the escalators.
And exactly where we were.
Yeah. And in the centre.
Yeah.
In a certain centre on the big road. And and you were going... Hi, I went, oh, hi. And we were both, I was going into the gym. You were coming out of the gym. And you went, how are you? I went, fine. We were on the escalators. I remember getting to the top. And every time I see you, you just make me smile. You really do. I completely adore you. And I got to the top and this man behind me, this is true, this man behind me went, excuse me. And I went, yeah. He went, was that Charlene Spiteri you said hello to? And I said, yes. He went, oh, where had she been? And I went, she said she'd been for a swim. He went, oh, she swims. And he walked away.
Oh, my God.
No, but it was properly like you, suddenly you were real to him. You weren't rock star, Charlene. You were a normal person who'd gone to the gym and had a swim and
but
left with your hoodie
so
on.
Important. He's the most important thing in my life. I couldn't be a songwriter without Normal.
Normal, so, oh, you're so right, it's so important. You're very on showbiz, though,
God. I mean, I'm really lucky. I get to do a lot of showbiz things and meet a lot of showbiz people. But it really doesn't matter to me. I mean, I think because it doesn't matter to me, that probably that's the reason that I'm still here.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's the same as you. You're not really showbiz either. It's just a bit like, it's part of a whole circle of people that you get to know over many, many years. And you're in rooms with them or you share a laugh with them or you're at dinner or something like that. And then you get to know loads and loads of people and there's that appreciation of what everybody does. It's like we're all kind of in the same boat, kind of doing a job. I mean, I say a job very loosely, but it's because that was never what it was going to be. When I still sometimes kind of go, God, I can't really quite believe what I do.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. I completely get that.
I was in Muscle Shoals last year making a record and we were with Spooner Oldham. Spooner Oldham is a keyboard player that was literally one of the original Swampers band from Fame Studios. Played on the first four Aretha Franklin records. I mean, if you watch the Aretha Franklin story movie, like, Spooner's in the movie, it's like he's like this young little guy because she thought she was coming in to play with all she'd heard this music getting made at Fame Studios. She thought it were a bunch of black guys. Turns out they're a bunch of little skinny white guys and she was like, what is going on? Like who are these people? And that is like part of the whole story because then, you know, she had a very controlling husband at that point. who was like, you can't record with them. And she stood up and went, no, I'm going to bring them to New York and we're going to make this record because, you know, they're great players. And it's a really interesting story. The interesting story is like, there's the strength as a black woman. You know, one, being a woman at that moment in time, two, being a black woman at that time. I mean, Jesus, I mean, it's hard enough right now. Could you imagine back then of her, no, this is my vision, this is what I want, and I'm going to stand up for what I believe in, and I'm going to do it. And, you know, and the abuse that she was taking at that point within a relationship. It's an amazing, I mean, the story of Aretha Franklin is phenomenal. So we went to make a record with Spooner, and every day at 1 o'clock, we had to stop. And there was a show around the studio because it's all original. This studio is just phenomenal.
Oh, how
it's
incredible.
Just, it's all original gear, everything. And you go into this place and the records that have been made in the studio are like insane. And people come in and it's tiny and they walk right. We would all be sitting like in the control room like this, and we were literally like, we were like it was like being in the zoo. We were all sitting there. And they were like, oh, look, there's real musicians. And it just really sort of lit that whole thing. Like, God, yeah, we are real musicians. So we are. God, that's what we do. Yeah, we make records for a living. That's
so
what
you're,
we...
the little you that was bullied, thinking about and performing in front of the aunties who walked away, that child must look at what's happened and you sitting there thinking,
well, no, because I'm still a child just going, literally going like this, oh my God, I cannot believe my luck. This is what I get
so
to
is
do.
It luck? Is that really how you think
there's,
of it?
There's luck and there's a lot of hard work.
Hard work, yeah.
You know, it's like everything, as you know, it's like to... It's easy enough making the first record because you don't know anything and you're just kind of like, you just make it. Then after that, that's when the really hard work starts, you know, because then you're like, you know, it's like, well, why should you be relevant? Why should you still be allowed to make records? Why would people still want to listen to them? You know, have they not heard enough of you yet? So there's got to be a really strong work ethic, a really strong work ethic.
Have you, and you've got that with your downtime of doing the garden, as you said?
Yeah.
Digging the holes.
You know I need to go to work. I need to go to work, I need to pay the bills, I need to do the, you know, look after the family.
Do you still love what you do though?
Absolutely adore it. I think I probably love it even more now because I get it. I like, you know,
you've just spoken my language. That's exactly that's what I said to somebody last night.
Yeah.
Exactly word for word.
Yeah, I literally get it and I go, oh my God, yes. You know, it's funny. You know, I say to people all the time, it's like, it's weird. You start out at the beginning and you're like, oh, I'm really punk. I'm a rebel. I'm this and that. And you're not until you become old and then you get older and then you go, yeah, I really now am a punk because I don't give a flying hoot of who. I don't care if you like me. I don't care if you don't like me. I don't need any more. I'm like, fine. I'm all good. And that's when you really...
What a great way to be.
You know, then...
That does come with age.
It does come with age. I mean, people will be going like, yeah, whatever. Because the thing is the little bit of you when you're young, you're going like that, yeah, I don't care if you don't like me, but you go, like me, like me, like me, like me, please like me. But then you're going, no, I don't care. There's just that thing that you have, that contradiction that you have when you're young. And the contradiction is really important as well when you're starting out because contradiction is part of what it is you're doing. But then you start writing songs as you go older and then suddenly you're just like spewing everything onto a page. You're literally going, yep, take me. This happened and yeah, it wasn't good, but, or, oh my God, I am so happy that I'm happy to say I'm happy. You know, it's like, there's just a million things that you can say as you're older. You can really show your emotions and show your feelings and show your gratitude in very different ways from how you do when you're young.
It's very interesting. Years ago when I was doing kids telly, we'd ask, you or anyone who was in a band, you know, the kids would call up and they say, can you tell us your favourite song? Can you tell us your favourite colour? What do you like to eat? And what's the song? And every producer always used to say, can you ask Charlene? Can you ask Gary? Can you ask Dusty Springfield? Whoever it was, what's the song about? And actually...
Which is the most hated question.
Isn't it the worst question ever?
Also,
and as a presenter, we fight against that. I go, please don't make me ask that.
We just hate it because, you know, the whole thing is like, as a fan of music, I want to dream in the song. I want the song to be about me. I want the song to be about my life. I want the song to be about the people round about me. And that's what makes people connect with a song, is they can see something in the song that's them, that's a situation that they've been in or a place they've been in. And you always say that if you were standing on stage looking at an audience and you put little clouds above their heads and did a little picture of what they were like, thought that was about at that moment in time, every picture would be different.
Why don't you do that? One of your gigs.
I know.
Tell everyone to bring, actually hand out, do an intimate gig and hand out big clouds and give people big pens and see what they'd say.
Yeah, that would actually be a really good video as well.
But also they'd use their memories and you'd suddenly learn.
Yeah,
so
it's
much
amazing because people come up to you and they go, oh my God, when I was da-da-da-da. You know, the thing as well is there's different ages that people hear the songs at. There's different points in their life.
But you have so many ages loving you, don't you? Oh my God, yeah.
It's kind of insane. I mean, we're playing Glastonbury. We're playing Glastonbury. And literally, I know that we're going to walk out an audience. It's not our audience. It's young. And most of them will be like, oh yeah, Tex, I think I know who they are.
But my youngest one who's 16 knows exactly who you are.
Yeah, but they'll hear songs and they'll go, oh, right, oh my God, I never knew that was them. Oh, that's them as well.
Yeah.
So I think because they were the 4 or 5 year old in the car on the school run when we were literally at our height, there's no way they're going to like not know it. So then you go, oh.
You just sort of slightly blown my mind by saying that people know you for your music. But do that moment, oh, that's who it is. Yeah. That must be mind-blowing for you as well.
It's an amazing feeling because it's that point of, that's the really exciting thing because then you kind of go, yes, we just got them.
Yes.
You know, that's the really exciting one when you go, oh, great, maybe that person's going to go and you know, check out a Texas record, you're hoping.
You are rock, female in rock. Pop, whatever you want to call it, but it, you know, that's how a lot of people would perceive you.
Yeah, I just go, I'm in a band. That's
okay,
it.
All right, but for a woman fronting it and being as strong as you do, and the songs that, like you said, everybody knows, playing in the car, playing in the kitchen, wherever it was, have there been struggles because you are a woman? Do you think?
Oh, yeah.
Is it different?
I mean, literally, there was. I get asked, and people say, oh, you know, things have changed so much. And I'm like, no, they haven't.
They haven't then?
No, they haven't changed. They're just better hidden. You know, everyone's ticking the boxes. You know, I think we're living right now in a time where, you know, everybody's talking about this cancelled culture. You know, I have a 20-year-old daughter and they talk about cancel culture and everything like that. But, you know, a lot of it's a lie. A lot of it is just, you know, saying the right things and acting in a certain way. But they still have those bad thoughts, whether it's sexist, racist. There's so many
ageism.
There's so many prejudices out there. There's a lot of prejudices out there, and we're kidding on they don't exist. And I'm like, well, why are we kidding on at this moment in time that there is? I mean, the great thing is there's a generation coming through that don't see any of this.
Yeah, they don't see.
Hopefully
the racism, the homophobia.
Absolutely, they just don't see it. And you just go, thank God. You go, thank God they just... You know, they're like, you say to them, they're like, well, what are you talking about? I mean, they're oblivious to it. And you just go, yes. And you're hoping that's going to be those generations now that we live in a world that, you know, there'll be cross cultures, you know, cross, you know, relationships, everything. It's like, you know, we live in a world where it should be about, you know, it should be about supporting each other, loving each other and being kind to each other. And you think,
absolutely.
And I know you think, oh, that's hippy-dippy shit.
Not at all.
But you just think, you know, how hard is it? You know, I will tell you right now for an absolute definite that a big reason as well why Texas is still, after 35 years, still here in this, you know, yeah, we worked hard. Yeah, we try and write great songs. Sometimes we don't get it right. We try. That is the most important thing to us. But also the fact that, you know, when we have been like right on the top that and down the bottom, you know, we've just always been the same. There's never been any different us. You know, there's never been a different band. There's never been Big Shot. There's never been Arrogant. There's never been... I mean, yeah, you have a certain amount of arrogance to do what you do, but there's never been... mean to people, and I've seen a lot of people talking to people in a way that is just not acceptable, and you just think, no. I mean, good thing that's like happened to us has been because there's been a relationship and a rapport built with someone, and then suddenly you might be having a bit of dip and they go, yeah, but I like them, so we're going to play their record, or we're going to support them, or we're going to get them on the show or whatever, you know. Chris was the perfect example of that, you know, because when Chris was at Greater Manchester Radio.
Chris Evans was
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. So I'm just looking at Chris.
Well, he is just Chris to
he
us.
He is just Chris to us, exactly. You know, he was just starting out at Greater Manchester Radio when our first record was out in 89. And I made him a cup of tea because I was standing up. And I went, I'll make you a cup of tea. And he was literally like, what? And, you know, I didn't know that he was going to go on it. But you just think, and it's not that you're doing it for those reasons. It's just that be a human being.
Yeah, yeah.
Just be a nice human being.
Be generous and kind.
Be generous and kind to
spread
people.
Spread joy. That's
you
what
know,
this
it's
is
like,
all
it's
about.
Not really, it's not, my mom said to me, honest to God, if my mom was still here, if my mom caught me being rude to someone, I would have got battered. You know, I know you're not even allowed to say that nowadays, but it's like...
Oh, my mum hated me. She honestly used to hate me ever. When I say somebody said this or something, she'd say, no, just you be polite. You be polite back. If they're like that to you, just be polite. Always be polite.
It's really bad. I remember when I had that whole thing with Paris Hilton that was in the papers, yes. The Paris, Texas thing, when I had a bit of a...
That's everywhere. I mean, it's ridiculous
it was
if
funny.
You do
I had to phone up my mum straight away.
Did you?
Yeah, I phoned my mum because it was like my publicist phoned me up and says, oh, and then he phoned me and said, because I said, no, there was nothing. And then he went, I went, just say you can't find me or something like that. And because he was like, did you have a fight with Paris Hilton last night? I says, no, and it was a bit of an argument, which it was a bit of an argument because she stood my mate's coats. And I told her to get a grip. And she had all these big bodyguards. And I was literally like, listen, love, don't mess about here because seriously... I'll take you down. Do you know what I mean? It was one of those moments. And it was, and I cringe saying it as a mother. I literally go, oh my God, that's so outrageous. And then my publicist, he says, the papers are running it. And the papers come out and I was literally like, oh my God, my mum's going to kill me. That was my first thought.
But I like that.
But
normal.
But then it was so funny because every taxi driver in London was like, aren't you Gosha? I was like, oh my God. You know that thing where you just take a total beam where you're like, thank you. I'm so
sorry. What did your mum say? What did she say?
My mum went, well, I mean, it's not very ladylike was her first thing. It's not very ladylike. I mean, come on, seriously, me? Me? I'm like, mum, do you know your own daughter? It's not very ladylike. If you heard my potty mouth, she's like, I know, but still I like to think of you as a lady. I'm like, okay. So yeah, you know, my mum was just like that. And
it's funny, your mum died more recently than mine, but they're still there in the back of our head
never go
on
away.
Our shoulders.
Oh, they're your conscience.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they don't move. It's like, you know.
How did she feel about you and your success? And, you know, you are a worldwide, you know.
Oh, I could see the pride.
Really?
I could see the pride, yeah. You know, she was always like, it was just like a nod. You know what it's like when you look at your mum? It's like they go... You know, it's just that moment of just literally, yeah, I think there was, because my mum was a great singer and, you know, she was just like, my mum had all these amazing dreams and ideas. She was so creative and unbelievable. And you know, she was coming up at a moment in, you know, in life where, you know, you couldn't do the things that we can do now. You know, I remember saying to my dad, and I absolutely adore my dad and adored my dad. My dad just passed away just two Christmases ago. And, you know, but my dad was literally like hardcore. It's like, you won't do that. You can't cut your hair. It's like, what century are you living in, man? But my mum made my sister and I the woman that we are because... You know, my dad would go away to sea and he was 3 months away, 1 month off. And I remember mum would always be like, make sure you've got your own money. Make sure you've got your own house. Make sure you've got this. Make sure. I mean, she was literally setting us up for complete survival.
Good for her.
As women. And, you know, it was just always be independent. You know, be with someone because you want to be with them. Don't be with someone because you need to be with them.
And are you like that with Misty?
Totally. You know. You know, it's like, be with someone because you love them. It's like, do not go into a relationship because it's like, that's what you need. You know, I just think that's a recipe for disaster. You know, and everybody go, yeah, but love will not put food on the table. But yeah, but you can find a way around things to a certain degree when you do have that. Because when you're loved and you do love, it's like, it's probably the best thing you can have in your life, I would say.
Ian Brin.
He's a good man. You know, I'm very lucky that I've got someone that gets it. He understands the dream. He understands the desire to do what I do because he has the desire to do what he does. You know, I look at the pride and the skill and the love that he puts into everything that he does, and it's weird because I find that really sexy. You know, when someone loves what they do, you go, that's sexy.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, because
I get that.
You know, it was funny because a friend of mine, and I've told this story before because it was over lockdown this happened. And it's when we just were allowed to start seeing each other. And I went to my friend's house and two of my girlfriends were doing, they do meditation. I always have a bit of giggle at them. I go, bloody meditating, whatever. You know, and they were doing an online medication with some guy in California. And
Meditation.
Yeah. I was looking at me, slight faux pas there. That says it all, this is what I really think. So they were doing meditation and I was like, they came back up and they were like, oh my God, I just feel so like cool and light. And I went, I could never do it. And then, what do you mean? And I went, I just don't have the capacity of sitting still for that. And, you know, I'm not a jumper. I mean, I'll sit and I love just sitting reading a book and being still and love being on my own as well. I really need my own time. And I just went, no, I just don't have the patience. And somebody speaking, I'd be like, shut up. And my friend, which was really interesting, said to me, but you do meditate. And I went, I don't meditate. She went, you do, I've seen you on stage. And I went, what do you mean? I went amongst thousands of people. And she went, yeah, but when you, I've seen you sing, and when you're in that moment, you're meditating. And I was like, and then she said, because the only thing that exists in that moment in time is you and the song. And I was like,
that's so true.
And I went, wow.
What a different way of looking at it.
Exactly. And I went, oh my God, I understand meditation. I was like, that's what it is. So if you were like sewing something or you were doing pottery or you were
being
literally
in the moment.
Being in the moment. It's literally being, if you're sitting with a cup of tea going, this is the best cup of tea I've ever drank. Literally. And just, it's just you and the cup of tea. That's it. You're enjoying that complete moment. That's meditation.
And you feel like that about when you're on stage?
Well, I didn't realise that's what I did feel when I was on stage. I just was like, this is just the best thing in the world, you know, because you're just in the song and you're just singing those words and you're like, there's all these pictures going through your head of what you're singing about and what that song is to you in that moment. You know, I love singing. Also as well, because I'm doing a physical thing, because literally as I sing, you know, there's moments where I'm singing very, very quiet and it's very intimate. It's very, like, small. And then there's the moments where it just opens up and it's just like all this air and all this emotion and feelings just comes flooding out. It's like, but even when the voice is small, there's so much emotion there at that moment in time because you're controlling the emotion as well. There's times when I'm singing sometimes and I can feel like a big lump in my throat. I go, and it's not because I'm thinking about what I'm singing, even though I am, but there's a moment where the audience and you are all in one moment because that is what a gig is. A gig is not about us. A gig is about everybody in that one space sharing this massive energy. I literally sound like a hippie today.
What? No, you don't. You don't.
I sound like some
nutter. No, but I think anybody who goes to your gigs will know that and will hope that. And actually, I want that from everybody, whatever I go and see, whether I'm going to live music or if I'm going to musical theatre, which is a passion.
Even comedy, you just like, you go and see comedy, anything, you just, it's just that moment where suddenly, you know that feeling when you go to comedy or something and suddenly you just like, everybody just loses it and just laughs together.
But you're in that moment together.
You're in that moment together and the energy is created in the room. I mean, it's like you bat it out, whoever's doing what it is they're doing, you bat it out and literally the audience decides which way they're taking it.
I'm going to take you back a few years. I remember we were on a rooftop at a party in Kensington on a rooftop and I had
TV
show, and we always tease Rob about this. He's a lovely guy, still very dear friend of ours, and we were standing there and there were all these models and people, and I remember standing there with Rob going, oh, look. And then you were there suddenly. I was like, oh, thank
God I know somebody.
Oh, hello. And we were talking and Rob said, oh, what do you do? And you said, oh, I'm in music. And he said, oh, really? You know, have you made a success of it? And you went, yeah, no, we're sort of doing okay. And he said, oh, would I, you know, would I have known you? And he went, yeah. And then he looked at me and went, am I saying the wrong things? I went, no, it's completely fine. And he went, well, I've just done it over there to Robert De Niro's over there. And I just said, what do you do? He said, and you went, oh, I'm number one at the moment. And he went, oh. And I went, yeah, this is Charlene from Texas. And he went, oh, and I remember him walking away and he just came back and he was like,
but you think
Robert De Niro and Charlize Spiteri in one night.
I just think at least he's got a good story for dinner.
But he does. He it's tells like a good dinner story. Everybody.
You know, it was in a movie, wasn't
you.
It?
No, but he preferred you to Robert De Niro. He was
I met Robert De Niro the night as well and I was well chuffed.
Did you know, you knew who he was?
Yeah, of course I knew who exactly. Robert De Niro was. There's not many people, I mean, I must admit, there's not many people that I've been so lucky to meet so many people through my life and through what I do. But literally, it's like, you know, you just, I mean, a lot of people I meet, I'm like, oh yeah, I really like them. Like Robert De Niro, I'm like, I love De Niro. I mean, I just
did you tell him? Did you have a conversation?
No, I didn't. No, the only person I've ever literally like started going, was Kate Bush. I literally lost it. Kate Bush was like, I was like, oh my God, I love you so much. I mean, I literally turned into a proper fangirl. And I went,
what did she say?
She did that. Thank you so much. And that little Kate Bush voice that she has. And she kind of went, yeah, I just said, you've been such an influence on me as a songwriter and as a woman in music. And
she would have loved that.
I was literally like, and it was really funny because it was, I mean, it was Elton John that introduced me to her. And Elton was like, Char, you know Kate, don't you? And I was like, and I thought it was another Kate. Then you know, I went, oh, hi. And I went, oh. It was one of those moments. But yeah, I mean, it's literally like, that's the one person that I literally went with.
I love that. But also you do, I mean, it's, you know, you're best friends with the people. We're not going to name them because it's just, they're your friends. It's just, they're in the industry. But there's a lovely clip. I remember I was doing a radio show around Christmas on Radio 2 and we played out you with Judi Dench.
Oh,
singing
God.
Around the piano. That went completely viral. Went
I can't
completely
believe
mad.
It. I mean,
Judi Dench. I mean, she's royalty.
Judi Dench is one of the naughtiest people I've ever met. Naughty. She's so naughty and just mischievous. I mean, if there was, you know, a picture to go alongside Mischievous, I would put Dame Judy's face right next to it. She's one of the coolest people I've ever met. But we were a little bit tipsy and we had no idea, you know, we were at this dinner and we came out and there was one of those automated pianos playing Waterloo by ABBA and she jumped on it. So I just jumped on my head. I mean, I am literally singing. I'm literally singing down here. I'm like, whoa, I was so drunk. And literally we were giggling away and we had no idea that you know, I mean, it was filmed. We didn't know that somebody was filmed. Well, we saw some people with phones, but we didn't really think anything of it because we were drunk. And and then the next day we were at this lunch and I had my phone in my pocket and all the whole lunch was going my phone, and I thought, oh my God, it's my daughter, something's wrong. So I looked at my phone under the table and there's just like messages going, my friend was in Mexico City. She went, I'm in Mexico City watching you on the television. What's going on? And literally it had gone, and I must admit there was that little bit of me went, oh no, you know, oh my God, people will be like going, everything's going on in the world and people will be thinking, oh, look at them.
No, do you know what? We needed
out.
It.
And I was just, I thought, oh God, this
we
is horrible.
That.
And then it was, I think because it was, people could tell it wasn't rehearsed, but I went over to Judy and I said to Judy, I went, Judy, look, listen, she went, good God, if only we had known we'd have rehearsed.
Yes!
In that total Dame Judy voice. It was literally, it was the coolest thing ever. But she is just, she's a force of nature, that woman.
She really is.
She's very cool.
But so are you. So are you, you know, just accept it. I know you don't like a compliment. I think every time I try and compliment you, you blush and you put your head down. That's how I always think of you, Joe. No.
Oh, my God. I mean, seriously, me putting my head down.
Like, you do. You're like, oh, no. What makes you properly laugh?
My daughter's dancing. Honestly.
Oh, she's going to be really pleased that you said that. Misty?
No, because honest to God, right. So we watched that movie the other night, like literally, like we put on, we says, well, let's watch something scary. Misty went, right, everybody's talking about AI. We'll watch that Megan movie. And it's like this AI doll.
Is it terrifying?
No, it's not terrifying, but it's like freaky. It's proper freaky, right? And literally, we put it on, right? And she does this before she kills people. She does the dance. She does this mental dance. Like, look at this. And my daughter can do the dance to a T. And every time she gets up and she literally starts doing the dance, she keeps going like this. I lose it. I literally lose it because she does, she's like Betty Spaghetti doing the dance and I just can't stop laughing. And she also does a whole thing to the news. She does a dance to the news. Yeah, she does a dance to the news, she does stupid dances, which amuses me no end.
See, I love, you know, the amount of people that say that their kids are the people or the person that brings them joy and makes them laugh, and that is, isn't that?
Oh, there's, I'll be honest,
thing?
There's times when I really want to kill her. I mean,
she's your daughter.
I mean, there's points where I literally go, like yesterday, I could have killed her.
What did she do? Are we allowed to ask?
Yeah, no, I literally opened a cupboard. This is the God's honest truth. I opened a cupboard. Right? I am so OCD, right? I mean, proper, like, I have clothes from like in the 80s that are perfect. Literally kind of fit in them anyway, but they're perfect. Bang. On the, like, all the stuff, all the Texas
neat,
stuff.
In colours?
Neat.
Rose.
Cut in rows. Hung perfectly. Looked after. You know, yeah. There's like pieces that are like really important pieces within fashion that I have. Like, you know, all the collections and stuff. Like, bang, bang. The stuff that was given over the years, there's everything, right? And I literally opened the cupboard. And some of my good clothes were literally lying in a ball on the floor in the cupboard, and I lost it.
I wouldn't want to be Misty at that moment.
I literally went like, "Who are you?" I mean, I was literally.
You turned into a mother. Oh, you turned into a mum.
I mean, I literally, yeah, because I always say to my daughter, "I don't want to be your friend. I'm your mum."
Yeah, oh,
I will literally.
That's what my mum used to say.
Yeah, I'm no, but no, don't butt mum me. I literally, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you now.
Had she worn them? Or just tried them on?
She was trying them on. She was trying to figure it out. She's, but I was in a hurry. I went, I don't give a hoot what you were trying to do. You don't live in this house.
No messing with
Charlotte. And I said to her, I said, if you can't respect my staff, then it means you don't respect me.
You're reading off the mum script.
I'm on the mum script.
Oh.
And it's funny because with my daughter between 14 and 16, I hated my daughter. I literally hated her for 2 years. I couldn't stand her.
Teenage girls.
And I was like, I've done something really wrong here. I mean, she was horrible. She knows I say it. And I phoned up my mum and I went, seriously? I went, I mean, I was never like that. My mum went, really? Like, are you joking? I said, Mum, seriously, I'm thinking of putting a pillow over her face in the night. My mum went, I thought of doing that with you quite a few times. And I was like, really? Did you really think? And she, and I was literally looking at my mum going, you really considered putting a pillow over my face? And I had literally just said that about my daughter and thought nothing of it. I was literally, I'm going to put a pillow on her face and kill her in the night. She's horrible. She's just disgustingly horrible.
Now she's 20, she's back
she's
again.
Literally 16. She hit 16 and suddenly it was like a switch. She went, yeah. Bing! And I went, where have you been? Where have you
home.
Been for 2 years? Where have you been? But she's really messy. Really does my nut in. She's so messy. I went, you know, if you're like this, you'll not be organised in life. You can't hit, you just don't. I literally go like, because I can't deal with.
I'm just going to remind Misty that you are reading off the mum script. You're keeping completely exactly going.
Yeah, but I'm the woman that has packing cubes. Seriously.
Packing cube? What's a packing cube?
You don't know what packing cubes are? The little nylon bags that go inside your suitcase. So, like, you have all your underwear in one.
You don't just chuck it all in?
Not a chance.
Oh, we can't be going on holiday together then. Oh. I don't chuck it in. I fold. I don't roll.
You know, I have as well. I have, like, packing cubes that are permanently, like, kept packed. That
what?
I know. Yeah, like, so basically, that's my tour socks. That's my tour this. That's my this.
Tour socks?
Yeah, so
you have
like.
Special socks for your tour?
Yeah, for more on stage socks.
What's the difference between a normal.
I love
a
socks.
Day sock?
I got to tell you.
What
I
socks are you wearing now?
At the moment, I'm wearing just nice long blue ones. But things like that is like, I can't have a short sock because I know that as soon as I sit down, my trousers are going to rise up. So my sock has to come to my knee.
See, no, I'm trainer sock. I go trainer sock. I don't want socks showing. I can't have a sock showing.
Oh, no. And I love stripy socks. I've got hundreds of stripy socks. But then my daughter started stealing my socks.
She's taking your socks as well.
This was another one. She started stealing my socks.
And I said, I'd leave her.
I said, you and your big claw feet. I was like, I said to her, I've had those socks for 30 years.
Come on, they're from hell.
Yeah, I've had those socks for 30 years and you've just put a hole through the toe. And she went, you have not had those socks for 30 years. I went, I have had those socks for 30 years.
I mean, it's great for the environment. I'm delighted that you do that. You've had socks for 30 years without going through the big toe.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, I don't have big claw toes. Don't have long toenails. No, I can't do that.
Paris Hilton shouldn't be jumping on that coat.
Put holes through my socks. And they were one of my favourite ones. They were a striped sock, which I was really... And they had an anchor on the top. I was gutted. And I bought them in France. I know exactly where I bought them. I was so upset.
Oh, my God. You are just... Like I said, you're complete and utter joy. So you've got the very best of album out as well, coming out.
Yeah,
does that mean the next... Because your last best of was 20 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, this is 89 to 2023.
Okay, so the next one, right?
Oh, no, I'll be dead for the next
one.
No,
you will not.
Oh, my God, I will. Come on.
The ultimate best of ever, ever.
Yeah. It's got two new songs on it as well. So there's two new songs that are on this album. But I just thought it'd been a minute since we'd put out the greatest hits, and then they were in us over 20 years. And I went, oh, really? So, yeah, I was a bit shocked at that, for one. But again, just the whole thing with playing to like this new audience with like Glastonbury and everything, you're like, well, to be making new records. You know, I must admit, I hate when people do festivals or do like a big event on television, like the Olympics or something, and then they go in and they play their new songs, and you're a bit like, no!
I have to say, but you want one or two new ones. No, you want one. The old stuff.
You want one new one, and then like, it depends if they get three songs. If you get three songs, do you want a new one? No.
Especially festivals.
I mean, if it's a big hit at that point, yeah, then do it. But not if we don't know it yet. And it's coming out. Like, don't do it. Like, stop. Like, calm your ego down. Don't do the new song. Shut up.
Get your socks on.
Get your socks on.
Charlize Bateri, you are joyful. Thank you, my lovely.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Reasons to be Joyful. We would love it if you'd leave a comment. I mean, please make it nice because we really like those ones best. And subscribe and follow to Reasons to be Joyful. Coming up on the next episode, the most wonderful Rosie Jones. Yeah, yeah.